Judge Jones, we're on the record on the Malani and Bailey case. Case number 20-SK-02242. This is a continuation of our conference call on Friday. And I'm going to give the attorneys and the parties the weekend to think things over about an email that came in early Friday morning, and also about Mr. Oliveros's possible request to have additional testimony taken. Before we get to those questions, my clerk told me this morning that over the weekend another email came in regarding this case. I told her not to tell me what was in the email, or nor to tell me who sent the email. I don't know if it's from the same person that emailed the clerk on Friday or not. But I wanted to let you know that up front before we move on to these other issues. I just learned about this the latter part of the morning. So with that, just starting with the petitioner, Mr. McElroy, what did you want to tell me after having the weekend to think things over?
Well, thank you, Your Honor. Conferred with my client, and, you know, we feel that court heard the evidence. Both parties heard testimony from both parties, heard the witnesses, heard the arguments, opening and closing from both parties, and we feel that that at this point we would just ask that the court rule on the record that we've put forward, and that I can't speak to the second email or any other emails, but absent any other evidence, it looks like this that it's an ancillary contact, and that we would be satisfied if the court ruled upon the record. Having not seen or heard any motion of the contrary or for other evidence or anything from Mr. Oliveros, just based on that one email, our answer is, of course, thank you for sharing that, and we're content to have the court rule on the record and the merits so far.
Okay, thank you. And just as a reminder, I do not know who sent that first email, and I don't know anything else about it other than what I mentioned on the conference call on Friday. And again, I do not know anything about the email that came in this morning. So, Mr. Oliveros, what were your thoughts?
You know, let me I'll address the last part, the first part last. I have an exhibit that I would like to enter regarding the first claim. Let me explain to you what it is. We had as an exhibit a videotape purportedly that was taken by my client at the time of the first event. She submitted to us mistakenly the wrong video. So what she would like to do, and I think it's very compelling evidence of her claim regarding her not having the gun. So that's the exhibit that we would want to enter by, I think, testimony to lay its foundation. The second part is that we do have a rebuttal witness with regard to the third claim, and obviously this is a very unusual this third claim is unusual in that we got no notice of the third claim, quite frankly, until the day of the hearing. And it wasn't until after the hearing that a rebuttal witness approached a respondent with statements that we think support the respondent's position that she was never at the petitioner's place of work. Finally, I agree with counsel that I think all of these other emails, and there's probably more to come, that fundamentally the court has really taken the evidence, except for, you know, my proposed new exhibit and my rebuttal witness. But I agree with counsel that to reopen the case for this email witness or the other email witness, you know, isn't necessary, quite frankly. So, Your Honor, those are our positions with respect to moving forward.
All right. Mr. McElroy, did you want to respond to his request to take additional testimony and listen to his offer regarding this other exhibit?
I do, and I object to both of them on the following grounds. First of all, with regards to the video, this video was, you know, it was and is in, whatever it is in, it was in Ms. Bailey's possession the whole time. There was no mention at trial that it was, you know, that there was more. Ms. Bailey had the full opportunity under the law to testify about it, to testify that there was more, to raise this as an issue. And so, I mean, she had her day in court on this, and I object to the claim that they want to come in, you know, after the fact, and now they've decided to bring different evidence. With regards to the third claim, and this rebuttal witness that they have now identified, Mr. Oliveros' office had knew about this incident at least as early as Monday of last week, and it was discussed with him and his staff, Mr. Wolf, and the paralegal in their office, both on Monday and Tuesday. Mr. Oliveros indicated in court on Wednesday morning of last week when we had our hearing that he had in fact received my memorandum of law the night before, that he had read it, and that the memorandum contains details about the third, what I called in the memo, the third contact. Now, Mr. Oliveros, neither Mr. Oliveros nor his client nor any other witnesses, when we had testimony and before both parties rested, mentioned that there was an additional witness here, or that they had not had their full ability to put on witnesses, evidence, arguments, and even claims by Ms. Bailey as to the third contact. So again, I would object to this, and the claim that is unfair surprise is just not true.
What's your response to that, Mr. Oliveros?
You know, the court always has the ability to reopen a case for good cause. We're not setting aside a judgment under 71. We're just stating to the court that we have a video that this office does not have possession of that we believe is highly relevant. We believe it could be exculpatory, or in the alternative, maybe it helps petitioner's position. But by no means is there prejudice to petitioner's petition if she's allowed to view this video of the alleged incident, I think on August 25th. With regard to the third claim, I'm not sure about it. Again, I didn't really know about it until the day of the hearing. And, you know, I know that when I spoke to counsel about memorandums, I endorsed the lateness of his memorandum. I didn't have a problem with it. But if he's telling me that I knew about the third claim before we went to court, I just, quite frankly, I don't know if he had a conversation with me, my associate, or my paralegal. But be that as it may, what we have is a person that is a rebuttal witness that would say something contrary to what petitioner testified to, Your Honor.
Well, Mr. McElroy's saying that you knew about the third incident being part of the trial as of Monday, so 2 days before the hearing.
Well, I spoke to Mr. McElroy Tuesday. I mean, is he saying that we talked about a third claim? I think that our conversation was more like, are you going to file a memo? And then I said to him that I need to consult with my staff and with the client. And then I came back to him toward the end of the day Tuesday, and I indicated to him that I'd be filing a memorandum. And I think that the memorandum was filed before the end of the day. So I have no idea what he's talking about. I mean, I really don't.
I think
counsel would tell you that we had the conversation regarding whether or not we should file, and I think he would have to support my position that we had discussions about simply showing up. So where he places some conversation about the third claim, I mean, I was surprised when we were in court, Your Honor, and that wasn't disingenuous.
What about regarding the video, why wasn't that ready to go during the trial?
I think it was an honest mistake on her part. I mean, it was an honest mistake on her part. Obviously, the video that was lodged into the evidence really didn't move the needle one way or another. And I'm not blaming the client, but I asked her about it, and with everything that was going on, it was an honest oversight on her part. Nothing more, nothing less.
What about this witness not coming forward sooner? What's that about?
But, Your Honor, that goes back to the third claim. My client maintained on her testimony that she did not drive by the petitioner's restaurant. She did not have any independent knowledge of a rebuttal witness until after the hearing. And she learned about that actually inadvertently and accidentally. So at the time of the hearing, she did not know there was someone that could rebut petitioner's testimony. She didn't know.
So both you and her were caught by surprise on Wednesday when the evidence came out about that third incident?
Yeah, that's to the best of my recollection, yes. I mean, I think that the idea that he and I even discussed not submitting memorandums really supports my position.
Now, if I could be heard on these.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, Mr. Alaris is not correct in saying we only talked about memorandums. We talked about the merits of the case, we talked about the case law, and we talked extensively about potential other settlement options we have. And we explicitly talked about the multiple contacts prong of the case. And I explicitly spoke with, in depth, the multiple contacts aspect of the case and went through these multiple contacts with his associate attorney Eric Wolf on this matter. and his paralegal, Aaron Angelo, on Monday. When we were initially going through, when they were saying, well, you know, you don't have a case, you know, I said, yes, we do, here it is. They said, you know, you have multiple contacts. I said, here are the multiple contacts. I went through this in detail. There was no surprise about these multiple contacts. They knew about it for at minimum 2 days prior to the trial.
So you're saying you talked to Mr. Wolf and somebody else? But
yes, Your Honor. Paralegal Aaron Angelo. I had called initially for Mr. Oliveros about this case, and they were described to me as assigned to this case as well, and tasked specifically with discussing it with me. So I discussed it with both of them. It was they were on speakerphone in their office. I discussed it with them, and it was later in the afternoon that I spoke to Mr. Oliveros, and then again on Monday.
And it's your memory that on Monday you spoke with Mr. Oliveros about this, the third incident with the white vehicle.
That I'm not as 100% sure of, to be perfectly frank, Your Honor. I don't remember if that was, if in my conversation with Mr. Oliveros on Monday afternoon, I just can't tell you for sure one way or the other. I can tell you with absolute certainty that I spoke with his associate about it and the paralegal about it beforehand, but we didn't just talk about memos on Monday or Tuesday. We talked about kind of all aspects of the case, and you know, I was trying to find ways that we could reach a way that protected my client, that all parties would get behind. To answer your question, I'm less certain about talking with Mr. Oliveros on Monday about that third contact.
Okay, so Mr. Oliveros, you're just saying that Mr. Wolf and the other person just never talked to you about this third incident?
I mean, I can go grab them, Your Honor. Yeah, I can tell you that never came up through my associate or my paralegal. I wouldn't remember that, Judge.
Okay, so we'll leave this off now. A couple of ways. If I decide to allow this additional evidence to be an attempt to submit it, how long, Mr. Oliveros, do you think it would take to hear this additional evidence?
Video, we're looking at 10 minutes. I'd call a respondent. She would lay the foundation for the video, and that would be it. And with regard to I want to call this person a rebuttal witness. I can't imagine, Your Honor, that would be 15 minutes. I'm going to call that witness. I'm going to ask probably no more than 5 questions, but in total, I can't imagine that the direct examination of my client and the witness that supports Claim 3 would be no more than 20 minutes. I mean, they're very, very, the live witness is very brief.
All right. Then I think what we'll do is to send both of the attorneys the second email and then give you time this afternoon to talk to your clients about it. Decide if you also want me to just disregard this email and move on, or if you have another request about it. So we'll do that for now, is to send you the second email. While you're thinking about that, I'll think about whether to allow this additional evidence, and we'll try to touch base later this afternoon. I have a full docket today, of criminal cases. We have ex parte at 1 o'clock. We have in custody arraignments at 2. And we might have out of custody overflow after that, or?
We might.
We might. That starts at 3. So I guess at this point, we'll send you the emails, and then are both of you available for another telephone conference at 4 or 4:30, Mr. McElroy?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Oliveros?
Yeah, we'll make that work. I'm booked to the eyeballs, Your Honor, but of course this takes priority.
All right. Well, we'll try to touch base with you at 4, and if we are running late on the other docket, we'll send you an email about that. But for now, we'll send you the second email, and then we'll talk further at 4 o'clock today.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Record.
Okay, we're back on the record on Maloney and Bailey, case number 20SK02242. Left off with sending the second email that had been sent to my clerk's email address, which I didn't read, to the parties, the attorneys. With that, McElroy, did you... how did you wish to proceed in light of the second email?
Thank you, Judge. Yeah, we've reviewed this second email and are not asking the court to reopen the whole case over this.
Okay. And Mr. Oliveros?
Your Honor, I just sent it to my client. It is benign, and if counsel doesn't want to reopen the case based on those emails, I agree. I don't think it really adds anything, quite frankly, one way or another, and support his position that, you know, we don't need to reopen the hearing on those grounds.
All right. Then, again, I haven't read that second email. I don't know who the senders are on either one of them or if it's the same person. The question for the two attorneys is, if either of you object to my clerk sending an email back to the sender or senders which says, please do not contact the court with this type of information. Instead, if you wish to send any further emails, direct them to the attorneys in the case.
That would be fine, Your Honor.
McElroy?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be fine.
Mr. Oliveros, is that okay?
Yeah, that would work, Judge.
We'll have her do that when we're finished here this afternoon. And the second issue, whether to allow additional testimony at the request of the respondent, I think that is a reasonable request. And I'm sure if the petitioner had information that she felt was important, that she make the same request. Again, I haven't reached a decision on the case yet. So it looks like at the most we would need is a couple of hours. And I have some proposed dates for the two attorneys. And again, we are working with our central docketing clerks. We do not have our own individual dockets in Clackamas County, so we are working with other folks who are coordinating the dockets that would need to be cared for by all of the other judges. So one date we have is, I'm going to throw out these dates, and then when I'm finished, I'll ask you one at a time what works for you. One date is on Friday, November 6th. A second date is in the afternoon of Thursday, November 12th. Another date is any time on Monday, November 16th. Another date is in the morning of November 17th. And we also have tomorrow afternoon available. So with that, and I believe that it would be appropriate to have folks appear in person if they can, but if they wish to appear remotely, we can of course arrange that. So with those dates provided, Mr. McElroy, what works for you?
I could do the 16th or the 17th.
All right, so to be clear, you're busy on Friday, November 6th, and the afternoon, November 12th.
I'm conferring with my client right now as well.
You're conferring with her by email or text?
By text message.
So November 16th, and what was the other November date?
November 6th, anytime. November 16th, anytime. Or the morning of November 17th. And also, excuse me, the afternoon of November 12th.
The 16th would be the easiest day for me to attend.
Is that Ms. Maloney?
Yes, sir.
Maloney? Okay. 16th. Does the 16th work for you, Mr. Oliveros, and your client?
Your Honor, I am at an out-of-state CLE. That makes the 16th, I'm out-of-state. And the 17th, I'm gone. November 6th, there is some time. I think it's 1 hour. On November 6th, I could be available from 4 to 5.
What about the afternoon of the 12th?
I'm out of state, Your Honor, on the 12th. I'm gone from, I think, the 12th is my first day. And these are professional conferences, it's not vacation. I'm gone from the 12th, and I think I'm returning to the office on the 19th.
All right.
Those are bad. I'm just gone.
What else is going on November 6th?
November 6th, let me see. I have a short docket matter, Your Honor, in Clackamas County on a family law motion to compel, but I think that I could be done. If I could get to the top of that docket, I could be available as early as 10 o'clock and would stay at the courthouse until noon. So that's the morning of the 6th, which is Friday. I have the judicial settlement conference in Multnomah County that same day from, call it 1 to 4, essentially. It's a big criminal matter. But I could be back in Clackamas County at 4 o'clock on the 6th.
Mr. McElroy, what do you look like morning of November 6th around 10?
I am out of town all day. November 6th.
What about tomorrow afternoon? Mr. McElroy?
I'm looking.
Or Mr. Oliveros. You
can... Yeah, tomorrow's not great.
Your Honor, tomorrow I'm back in Clackamas County at 10 a.m. for a case manager. I could be available before or after. In the afternoon, I could move things around, but I could be available in the afternoon as well. But I do have a one court appearance at 10, and would be happy to show up early or stay late tomorrow. Or I can move everything in the afternoon to be available after 1:30.
Also, Your Honor, with regards to tomorrow, given Mr. Olivares' offer of proof, we need a little bit more additional time to address those claims, and we have some relevant evidence related to his offer of proof that we need to assemble, and tomorrow is just too soon to do that.
Okay, then. So, Mr. Olivares, your conference is actually physically someplace else. You're not appearing remotely?
No, I am out of state, thousands of miles away, Your Honor. Now, theoretically, if there's a way for me to connect with the court, certainly Ms. Bailey and my associate could be in the courtroom. I don't know how to do the technology stuff, but yes, I'm thousands of miles away at a conference, at a legal conference. In person.
But you're saying you would take a break from the conference to attend remotely?
Oh, boy.
I thought that's what you were just proposing.
Yeah, I'm... Your Honor, I'd have to check. I want to go back and see... Yeah, I think it could be done. I could report to the court on which day would be better, the 16th or the 17th, but yes, I think that I could make arrangements to be away. I mean, it's, I would envision that between the direct testimony and cross, it would be no more than 2 hours. But I could report by email to Your Honor regarding which day would be better. And so the way that would work would be, I would be the only person away from the courthouse and the parties and my associate would be there in person.
Where is your conference?
It's in the state of Hawaii.
All right. And so why don't we leave it off at this? You look at your program materials and see if it'll work for you on the sometime during the day on November 16th or the morning of November 17th, which I think was both Mr. McElroy and his client were available at both times, and I think his client preferred the 16th.
That's correct, except insofar as my client would prefer the 17th, all things being equal, but we can make the 16th work as well.
Oh, all right. So why don't you look at the schedule Mr. Oliveros, and then send my judicial assistant and Mr. McElroy an email about whether that's going to work, and we'll pick one of those times, and if it doesn't work, then we will have to regroup.
Will do, Judge. Thank you.
All right. Then that's all for today.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody.
Bye now.